The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
How to think about being religious or spiritual in relationship to a body is not a simple question, and it hasn't been simply answered in most religious and philosophical traditions. Stephanie Paul Sell, a Disciples of Christ minister and a professor at Harvard Divinity School, in her book, Honoring the Body, writes this. There seem to be as many descriptions of the body as there are people to describe it. The body is a friend or a traitor, a gift or a task. Something precious knit together by God's own hands, or a prison house of the soul, which according to Plato is trapped in the body like an oyster in a shell. Most descriptions of the body tend to fall into one of two camps. Some suggest that the essence of who we are is merely encased temporarily in a body. In other words, a body is something we have. Others suggest that it is essentially that what is essential about human beings cannot be separated from our bodies. In other words, we are our bodies in a fundamental way. Which camp are you in? We have a body, we are our bodies. Paul Sell thinks, and I think she's right, at least for me, that these two distinct ways of thinking about and being in relationship to our bodies that most of us know of and have experienced do not seize us, as she says, once and for all. Instead, if we think about it, most of us, I think, probably notice, if we pay attention, that we move back and forth between them, often in response to experience or circumstances. Play a game of volleyball or do any physical activity that you do all the time, and you fall into eventually that experience of flow. Does anyone know that experience of flow, doing something physical that you've practiced a lot? The times that we train for when muscle memory kicks in and we are our body, beyond some practice of thought and response, this natural ease and deeper knowing, you move to the ball without thinking or planting your feet intentionally in some place, and you rise to meet it, and it passes right into the hands of the player who has moved to receive it. In these moments, moments like these, for me, I am my body. We are me, one shining example of knowing and doing and being. But for most of us, illness, pain, times the body cannot or will not do what we want or need it to do are the ones, as Paul Sell writes, it is just as easy to feel that our body has become our enemy, that it is an inadequate container for the person we truly are. In the course of our daily lives, she continues, we probably operate with double understanding that we can feel both ways, one day to the next, sometimes one moment into the next. And all of this points to the difficulty of defining just what body is in our relationship to it. This unresolved tension is present and reflected in religious traditions, and maybe that's why many of us are confused about not just the problem of evil, but how to think about the body and ourselves in relationship to it, and whether and how to trust it or conceive of it as part of our religious or spiritual journeys. Talk about trust and the body. could be whether we can trust in our bodies to reliably do what we want them to. The sermon title could apply to that, and if that's the conversation we were to have, it would be a short one, because trust in our bodies in that way will be broken. It will be impossible to have for the span of our life. And for those born, as some of us are, with chronic illnesses or other conditions, it's been broken from the beginning. But even for those among us who are fortunate to be able-bodied folks, trust in the body, of it reliably doing what it should or needs to, is eventually going to be eroded as we age. So that's not the trust I'm interested in exploring together. With respect to our religious and spiritual lives and growth, the body and trusting it and leaning into it because we can trust it shows up in other ways, I think, important ways. For all of us, our body is a central means by which we can connect to the world outside us, right, and to other people, both directly and sympathetically, and to the wisdom about our own needs and wants, too. The first two are obvious: connection to the world and others. We know the world. It's so obvious. You and I, we know the world. We take it in through our senses, right? You open the door, the window, first thing in the morning. And what happens to us? We appreciate the gray skies with our eyes, right? And we stretch out our hand and we feel the light, wet rain on it. And we hear the rain landing on the pavement and reflected in the sticky sound of water on tires hitting the road. And we smell that aroma of wet earth, and gravity we feel as it pulls and anchors us to the floor or our seat as we walk or roll to the kitchen to sip the hot, sour, roasted taste of fresh coffee that says that the day has irrevocably begun. We know the whole world through our senses, and intimately so. And the same will be true of how most of us know one another. We know each other, even the interior lives of one another, we read that from what we perceive in our senses, right? From the micro expressions we see in a face, from the touch that by its quality tells us something about whether affection or fear or control is part of the dynamic. We perceive it in the tone of voice that will say as much about what the person means to communicate as the words they use, more in fact. We also, you and I, we have larger sympathy for people we've never met. That is an intellectual extension of something we only know through our bodies. We talked a few weeks back in this season of Ramadan and of Lent now, of fasting. We talked about this, how we're sympathetic to the hungry, not because of some intellectual exercise, but because, not just that, but because we remember the embodied experience of gnawing stomachs, maybe only for an hour, maybe every day of our lives at some point. And our minds extend that experience and that knowledge to those we know and are told do not have enough food. We know their pain here, and our compassion comes out of that. Connection to the world, to ourselves, to others, it comes through our bodies. Stephanie Paulsell writes, quote, "At all times, it's the body that allows us to reach out for one another, to steady each other on our feet when we are weak, to embrace one another in joy and despair. And I think we can, we must, and we do trust the wisdom and the portals to knowing that our bodies give us in these parts of our lives. I don't know how we'd live without trusting it. I'm not sure what our religious and spiritual lives, our ethical lives, our choices would look like if we didn't trust this. So in a conversation about trust and the body, we can and must trust and cherish this. In fact, I actually worry about truths that come out of abstraction from the body, which time and time again seems to be more about objectifying rather than connecting, and it's dangerous. And the other piece that our body offers us is that it communicates wisdom to us about our own knowing and being, about ourselves, pieces that are incredibly vital to your and my wholeness. I will admit that I am still learning and leaning into this piece, this portal to wisdom, the wisdom it offers. I don't think connection to and trusting our body's wisdom is helped. I don't think the road is laid well by an education system and an economic system that, in my experience, is very often more what you would call industrial in its framework. The education system that I went through rewarded us for being grinds. And think about that word as an idea that you give kids as something that is laudable, and what it does to the relationship to body. And we all enter a work world that, for most of us, rewards productivity, that's very narrowly defined. In my experience, those things make a world in which sleep is often a distraction, and food is functional, and time is money. It's not space to reflect or to pay attention or to go deep, and the body is a vehicle. I started to see how I'd internalized that framework years ago here, and the messed upness, if that's a phrase. This is a different point, but I did start to realize that years ago, and the messed upness of it, when my husband said something that actually floored me, something that really quickly has become a mantra for me and this sort of lifeline that pulls me back and anchors me to a different center of gravity, a better one, a wiser and more compassionate one, self-compassionate one. I was working hard, I was exhausted, I was beating myself up at the same time for not doing more and not having deeper reserves, when my husband turned to me and he said, "Vanessa, you are not a machine. You are not a machine." But how many people can think of ways in which we are trained and rewarded, maybe still are, for acting or trying to act like a machine? Well-oiled, asking nothing, able to plug in and grind out our stuff into the world, memos, whatever that is, we're grinding out memos or code or billable hours or sermons even. I mean, it applies to all of us, right? Or if you have a body or a mind or a life that cannot behave like a machine, how has that made you feel? Beautifully human? Or desperately, shamefully broken? Less than? And what does it mean to conceive of our bodies differently, more soulfully, and befriend them? because I'm increasingly seeing that actually this body is this incredible vessel for knowing and wisdom, that often it knows things about me, pieces of me, that I am unable to perceive without it. And it's dropping breadcrumbs all the time, and sometimes it's sounding alarms. Some of you know that years back, this is just one example that woke me up to this, I had back pain and I thought I'd slept wrong and it got worse and worse. And then I was like, oh God, I fractured something working out. How annoying. And I waited and it got so bad that I couldn't sleep at night. So I went to the doctor and he was this lovely guy and he asked me lots of questions and we had just general conversation about our lives, which was intentional, I now realize, as he moved my arm and tried out all these poses and asked me about how they all felt. And then he took a deep breath, this sweet doctor, and he looked me in the eyes and he said, Vanessa, your back is not broken. You just have a lot of stress you're holding in it. And my jaw dropped. And he offered me muscle relaxants and PT, and I took neither of them because immediately I thought, oh my God, he's right! And went out and thought about what it was that I was trying to quite literally hold on my back, right? That I couldn't. And I called Carrie Steer Salazar here, and she called five people, and we gathered a task force, and the thing that no one could do alone. But I felt like a machine who had to try and do it alone, and that's my problem. We fixed it. Our bodies have so much wisdom about interdependence, about yearnings, about hungers that are actually real and good. We have that spiny sense that tells us when we actually should think something is wrong, right? And we have that warm feeling that we get when we are in the presence of someone who feels like a kindred soul, as my mom would say. And if something or someone has hurt us, our senses sharpen, right, to be on alert for similar situations and protect us. And in places where we've learned that there is joy and safety, we can feel ourselves melting as we should into them. There's so much wisdom and healing and way forward that our bodies hold out to us. To trust in our bodies in this way is to treat all the things we only know through our body as information, as invitations, rather than inconveniences or obstacles to be pushed through if that's what we're tempted to do. To see our bodies this way is to see them not as machines, but as portals, right, to self-knowledge, holding out vital messages that land otherwise on our shoulders or twist our gut, or maybe they show up in the fluttering of our hearts, in exhaustion that says, you need rest, baby. And the overwhelm that says, find some quiet. And in the hunger that says, darling, bodies need food to live. And in the yoga that teaches us where we find spirit, and the singing that connects us to each other, the ringing of bells that reminds us we're interconnected, and what it feels like to do that, to be that. And all of it leading us, I think, to deeper peace and wholeness and joy. And the trick is to hear it before it gets desperate for us to hear it. So whether we are a body, you and I don't know. Or whether we just have a body, I don't know. I think Stephanie Paulcell is right. We can vacillate on that question. And our bodies may not ever and will not always do what we want and need them to do when we need and want them to do the things we need and want them to do. They will fail to fight off cancer. They will not find a way to keep our blood pressure low. They will catch our falls, not always without breaking. And we can trust them to be sources of connection to the world and to each other. And we can trust them to be sources of connection to our own deepest selves and the breadcrumbs that lead us ever more to that deep self. And to do all of that and to embrace it, we just have to befriend our bodies again and again. Lean in with trust. Listen, cherish, care, pay attention, wonder. May we do so and be blessed by the whole of how we walk and what we bring with us always, wherever we go in this life. Amen.
Well, Vanessa just went rogue and did that before Reiko got back.
I took over your
Hellfire, Reiko. My name is Kathleen Quenneville. As a young adult, I fell away from the Methodist church in which I was raised. Once Diane and I had a son, though, we wanted a religious home. This was quite a while ago. Diane and I decided to try the UUs, the faith of our progressive elder friends. Our community helps me reflect on passages and important matters that could otherwise go unmarked in life. Diane and I were married here in 2008, after nearly 25 years as a couple. Our son received wonderful grounding in world religions, with no one giving a second thought to him having two moms. I have served this congregation as its moderator, treasurer, and in many other ways since the early 1990s, and I'm proudest to have been a part of the teams that brought Reverends Vanessa and Laura to our church. Playing in the bell choir has been an entirely different experience than my other UUSF activities. At just a few bells each, we can't make music unless we listen to each other. I'm proud to call Reiko and my fellow ringers friends. This vibrant community needs our treasurer as well. As our treasure, as well as our time. Diane and I have renewed our pledge, increasing it over last year's amount and adding some extra for the anticipated rental shortfall. We encourage you to return your pledge soon if you haven't already, increasing your contribution if you can. The Bell Choir would like to dedicate today's anthem, a favorite of Reverend Kay Jorgensen, to the success of the annual operating campaign.
I'd like to invite Oriana, one of our youth, up to speak with you.
Good morning. I'm Oriana, and I've been coming to this church since I was in kindergarten. I'm now nearing the end of my freshman year of high school, so I've spent a lot of time here and have grown to value this community very much. Over the course of my life, I have developed an interest in social justice. This was, in part, due to the sense of social justice I felt growing up at this church. As a younger kid, I remember volunteering during the winter shelter every year and the constant presence of protest signs and posters around me. Additionally, this community ensured I understood how my body would change as I grew up and that it was perfectly normal. This open approach to talking about our bodies from a very young age provided me with the confidence to research the female reproductive system for my seventh grade science project. Each student had the chance to choose one human body system that they felt they had a personal connection to. I chose the female reproductive system because I felt suddenly empowered and excited to break some of the stigma I saw and felt surrounding menstruation. After my presentation, which included passing a pad around the co-ed classroom and a detailed explanation of how eggs are fertilized, I continued looking into my interest about this body system. I spent time reading articles and watching videos, and I also read a book focused on something called the menstrual movement. This is when my passion for menstrual rights began to grow. The menstrual movement is a cause that fights for menstruators' rights to period products and seeks to break the stigma around menstruation. It began in the 1970s with women such as Gloria Steinem, Judy Blume, and Angela Phillips. I know that many people did not grow up in the progressive environment I did. So, as women, and all people who have periods, our bodies are not always honored in the way that they should be. From society's view of menstruation as a taboo subject, to taxes on period products as luxury items, having a period can feel like something you should be ashamed of. But what our bodies do each month is incredible and should be honored always. Ever since learning about this movement, I've wanted to find ways to spread awareness about topics such as period poverty, when menstruators are unable to afford period products, and period stigma. This year, I got the chance to learn about and support an organization of my choice for a year-long English project. I chose Period, a youth-led movement that empowers young people all over the world to end period poverty and educate others about the menstrual movement. In the US, about 1 in 4 students have trouble accessing period products because they are too expensive. Through its work in equipping menstruators with reusable and disposable menstrual products, Period is working to change the statistic. They supply their chapters worldwide with an abundance of menstrual products that volunteers can distribute at a local level. Period also works with various nonprofit partners in the US, seeking to change relevant laws and policies. This Sunday's offering will go to Period, and I invite you to give generously. I am so grateful to our church for giving me the opportunity to speak about this organization and my passion for the menstrual movement. If you would like to learn more about this organization or the menstrual movement, I will be at a table outside in the hall with some flyers after service and more information to share. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Leela Bailey. I'm a member of the choir. I'm used to seeing all of the backs of your heads, so it's lovely to see your faces instead. Can you all hear me up there? Sometimes it's a little hard to hear up there. You can hear me? Great. Thank you. All right. Like Oriana, I was raised Unitarian Universalist by immigrant parents who escaped apartheid South Africa and the Anglican Church. Back then, we gathered in a small meeting house on the far eastern end of Long Island. We didn't have a regular minister, and we didn't have a choir, and we certainly didn't have a big, beautiful building. But even so, going there every Sunday gave me a sense of identity. It taught me not exactly what to believe, but how to decide what to believe. And most importantly, it gave me a place to belong at a time when I really didn't fit in anywhere else. So naturally, when I moved to San Francisco about 20 years ago, I was looking around for a place to belong, and I came here. I joined the choir and considered myself a part of this community for a while there. Then I met and fell in love with and married an atheist, and let's just say I drifted away for a little while. And I found other communities that were also wonderful, but during COVID, a lot of those people moved away. My beloved community choir disbanded. And so after COVID, I was looking around again for somewhere to belong. And I emailed Mark after maybe a decade or so out of the blue. And I said, hey, I'm thinking about coming back and when's a good time? And he was like, come on Thursday. Anytime is a great time to join. And since then, I've been a regular member of the choir for about 2 years, and those kind, wonderful folks welcomed me back with open arms and no questions asked. So the reason I finally decided to become a member, you see I have a like new member here, and maybe some of you saw me say the covenant last week, is that it felt like time to give back and to really ensure that this community stays strong through hard times like COVID, through a second Trump administration, in order to find a place and to sustain a place where people like me can find a place to belong. Mark and the choir have been so lovely and so welcoming, and I feel incredibly grateful to be a part of that singing community who also shares my values. So I encourage all of you out there who may have been lurking and lingering and thinking about maybe pledging or maybe becoming a member to go ahead and do it. It's gonna feel really good. It has felt really good for me to stand up here in front of you all and become a full-fledged member. And also for anybody who's been wondering, how do you join the choir? How do you get up there in that loft? Come on Thursday, we'd love to have you.
I've always been interested in religion, but what exactly has interested me over the years has changed. When I was growing up a conservative Baptist, all the way through my liberal seminary degree, I was obsessed with thinking my way to the most beautiful and life-giving vision of God that I could come up with. So I moved from Tampa, Florida, down to Claremont in LA, which was the former hub of process theology, to find answers to what theologians called the problem of evil. And it's process theology that provides the best answer. You might remember Reverend Laura preached about it a few weeks ago, actually. It offers a vision of God that is rooted in a cosmic love and alternative forms of power. I studied with some of the giants of the tradition, but the more and more I thought about theism, the less I was a theist. I wouldn't claim atheism, but now maybe a deeply held agnosticism. I don't know. But then I was introduced to Shivananda Yoga. Swami Shivananda and his student Swami Vishnu Devananda came over during the 60s, a little before the Summer of Love, and spread their Eastern traditions here in the West. Now, this is different from your trendy local yoga pop-up studio storefront type thing that focuses on stretching or hot yoga where you just sweat profusely. This is more a traditional version that honors the guru lineage and incorporates different prayers and meditative moments throughout the practice. And that's where I learned a whole new form of religion. For so much of my life, I was thinking about what God was or who God was and how God could be loving in such a messed up world. But for the first time in my life, my religion wasn't asking me to think about God too much or even about theology. This tradition brought everything home, deeply inward. My spirituality was brought into my body in ways never before. So get this. The hardest yoga pose is not a headstand or some crazy thing you've seen on a yoga retreat flyer. The hardest pose is Shavasana, the corpse pose, where you lie on your back with your arms by your side in complete silence and peace, and you're supposed to calm your mind. Which, if you've ever sat still for 5 minutes with your eyes closed, it's really difficult to close your eyes and to be calm and to just be you. The Swami instructors would, in a specific way, have you move in certain positions, and you'd start to notice your muscles working in ways that you'd never felt. You can feel the way your spine will contract and extend when you breathe a specific way. All of a sudden, you're stretching further than you were ever before, tuned into your breathing, and your mind has started to calm. After years of thinking my spirituality was about finding the right vision of God out there, I found a new vision of spirituality that focused on my body and my mind, with no need for a God out there. I'll close by reminding you that yoga literally means to unite and is about the unification of the mind and the body. It wasn't until I tried this ancient form of spirituality that I ever felt so connected to myself, my flesh and blood, my body. So I invite you to try it, to tune into your body in new ways, to ignite personal growth, because it always leads to social change. Blessed be.
All right, we're aware, we're running shorter on time, so we're going to keep this short. Good morning again. Here we go. I was going to bring up my daughter's speech accidentally, and luckily I didn't, to give you a talk not about the body anymore, but about pledges. So.
Today we'll just give you a... can you hear me? Thank you. Today we just want to give you a small update on how things are going with the pledge drive. There's great news. About 40% of the member households have pledged so far, and those that have done so have increased their pledge on average by about 20%. We've also had many one-time pledges to help make up for the loss of the rental income that we are currently dealing with. Thank you, thank you, thank you for stepping up and nurturing our harbor in this time of need.
And then the not so great news. We still have a very, very long way to go until we hit our target for this year. And we truly need every single one of you to step up. But we know that you all care deeply about this beautiful harbor want to see it strive, just like all of us. And this beautiful harbor aside, we know everyone loves a vacation, and what could be better than a vacation and beautiful Tao cabin?
All right, I'm just going to go right here. Do not forget, once you pledge, add your little origami boat to the float on the beautiful bulletin board outside after you pledge. Thank you.